thanks, Shan, for the very short notice stepping up, and she's going to present her project to us now because unfortunately Gustav couldn't be with us today. So thank you very much, Shan. Shan is a second year DPhil student in English at Balliol College. Her thesis, which is being supervised by Jane Griffiths, is on late medieval drama. She previously completed her undergraduate degree in English and an MST in Medieval Studies at Merton College. Research interests include late medieval devotional culture, the history of the book, and the history of medicine. And that's just a set of you can see my love for Japanese in there. Mm-hmm.
Reiterate that I'm very sorry that Gustav can't be here today, but I'm really grateful for the opportunity to speak at what is going to be a great conference. At last year's Teaching the Codex, one issue that was raised quite frequently was the fact that most students are only introduced to paleography and codicology at a graduate level, and that's also something that has come up today. Introducing undergraduates to manuscript studies then is itself a kind of outreach, loosely speaking, and I'm hoping that what I say will chime in with the other papers that we're hearing. So today I've been invited to speak briefly about teaching manuscript classes to undergraduates of English in the Bodleian Library here at Oxford, and it's a subject which I've recently written about on the Teaching Codex webpage, and I'd just like to take this opportunity to say that pooling together different people's experiences of teaching manuscript studies on this kind of website is a really valuable idea. And since it went live last year, I've definitely been inspired by other blog posts on there, so I really recommend it. Earlier this academic year, I had the opportunity to do some teaching for The Material Text, which is a paper for final year undergraduates taking English Course 2 at Oxford, which is the Medieval Language and Literature strand. Daniel Sawyer briefly mentioned this earlier during his paper. I myself did English Course 2 a few years ago, and at that point there was a similar paper on manuscript studies that went by a slightly different name. It's been a bit rebranded since then. And encountering manuscripts at such an early stage in my academic career made a huge impression on me. It kindled my interest in book history and was a large part of why I wanted to continue into graduate study. And I feel very aware that I'm talking about teaching manuscript studies to undergraduates at a conference where some of the delegates are themselves people who introduced me to manuscripts during my undergraduate and master's courses. So I feel like I'm a relative novice in this area, but I'm hoping that that will give me an unconventional and useful perspective. And for context, here is a description of the material text paper from the undergraduate handbook. I won't read all of it out, and this is just part of it. But the key point is that this paper, it's assessed by a portfolio of work. They have to produce, I think, a 5,000-word portfolio. And the paper encourages students specifically to study medieval manuscripts, i.e. not just the texts within them. And they're especially encouraged to think about how old and Middle English texts are edited, adapted, and presented in modern editions. And while the bulk of the paper concentrates on the Auchinleck manuscript and the Noel Codex, there's also a chance to see some manuscripts in the Bodleian's collection, which is the part of the course that I'm going to be talking about today, and one of the parts of the course that I was most involved with. This paper at Oxford is taught collaboratively, so several different people teach different parts of the course, and this is the bit that I'm going to be talking about today, is the manuscript class. There were 6 students in the class. I'd done some previous work with them, so I had a fairly good idea of what they knew and what they didn't know, which was quite a good starting point for me. To briefly take a step back, the main difference between this kind of class and the manuscripts outreach network that we're about to hear about in Anna's paper is that the students have a very different starting point. These undergraduate students I was working with, they've already been studying medieval literature for a few years by this point. They were in their third year, they were already in the middle of the course about manuscript studies. So I knew what they did and didn't know, and I also was trying to equip them with more information rather than just giving them a very basic introduction. Whereas in the manuscript outreach network, not to tread on what I'm saying, but just for context, that was very much introducing secondary school students who had never seen this kind of material before. My role, by contrast, was to give these undergraduate students extra knowledge on top of what they already had, and help them to ask useful research questions about the objects in front of them. So specifically, I had 1 hour, and in that time, I wanted to give them some information about how manuscripts were pricked and ruled, and while also encouraging them critically to think about page design. For the rest of my paper, I'm going to show you some of the manuscripts that I picked and why I thought they were particularly useful, and reflect on this a bit. So I started with Bodleian Library MS E54, which is a 15th century manuscript which contains a version of Chaucer's Treatise on the Astrolabe. The last few folios are mostly blank, and I felt this particular one on the screen would be an especially useful teaching resource because it contains a ruling pattern that hasn't been filled in with lines of text. The two pictures on the right are close ups. So because the text hadn't been filled in, I was able to point out the prickings and the rulings really easily. And we use this as an opportunity to discuss how those features were made and really focus in on them, while at the same time I flipped back and forward through the manuscript so they could compare an empty ruling pattern with one that had been filled in. As I hoped, this page led to quite an interesting conversation about why parts of medieval manuscripts might be left blank. So a popular suggestion from the students was that the scribe had ruled the pages in bulk but did not require them all, which got them thinking about the practicalities of manuscript production. And I might just say there that one big advantage of doing the classes in this way is because there are only 6 students, we were really able to start more of an interactive conversation and really get talking back and forwards rather than working with a large group, which that might be quite as easy. I felt I was able to attend to each of the students' individual questions and concerns and interests. So moving on, I wanted to give the students a sense of the wide range of layouts that it's possible to find in medieval manuscripts, from the meticulously planned to the more chaotic and ad hoc. So after the introductory one with the empty ruling pattern, I turned to this one, MS Ashmole 1378, which is a late medieval recipe book with no ruling at all. It does, however, have manicules pointing out noteworthy sections to the reader, like this entertaining piece of advice on how to make a woman love her husband and forsake all other men. The reader is advised, quite dubiously, to extract the bone marrow from a wolf's rear left foot and carry it about with them. This and other entertaining and questionable recipes are going to feature in Daniel Wakelin's new book coming out this year, Revolting Remedies in the Middle Ages. This is the one he mentioned in the previous plenary. And actually, I first encountered this manuscript exactly as he said, which was in terms of looking at a text that's never been transcribed and trying to transcribe it for myself. So I find it quite nice with this example, but this was originally a way that I was taught how to transcribe texts, and I've seen that come to fruition in Daniel's upcoming edition, but also I'm getting to use it in a new way now I'm teaching. And I found that using entertaining recipes like this piqued the interest of the students, and in the process really helped them bring the manuscripts to life. At the other end of the spectrum of page design, I wanted to show the students how complicated the mise-en-page can get. So I turned to Ashmole 391 Part 5, which is a witness of John Summer's Calendarium from around 1460. The text contains a variety of useful information, including a chart of movable feasts, dates for solar and lunar eclipses, and finally medical guidance. Each page has a bespoke ruling pattern that suits the information at hand, which makes it a really useful teaching resource on page design. I was able to show them different pages and indicate that very different kinds of page design were required for different types of information. And the students, I think it really brought home just how complicated the process of making a manuscript can be and how much care and consideration can go into each stage of organising everything on the page. So after them showing the students a variety of these different pages, I chose to focus especially on the Zodiac Man page, which I hope would stimulate discussion. Here are 2 pictures of it. When I turned to this page, I explained to the students that a Zodiac Man is an image of a man marked with signs of the Zodiac according to the parts of the body over which those astrological signs were thought to have influence. It was believed to be unwise to operate on a given part of the body when the moon was in the corresponding sign. So you shouldn't cut into the head when the moon is in Aries, or you shouldn't cut into the feet in Pisces, which is why there are some white feet white fish, of the feet. I then clarified that while these kinds of diagrams weren't uncommon in astromedical literature in late medieval England, what is unusual about this one is the piece of cloth that's been sewn in to cover up the diagram, which was quite possibly added by an early user, if not the original owner or scribe himself. I was particularly fond of using this example because their paper was of course called the material text, so I liked the symmetry of showing them a piece of material in a text. I asked the students what they thought the purpose of this kind of cloth might have been, without giving any hints. And as I hoped, asking an open-ended yet targeted question like this started a productive conversation with students coming up with a range of different answers. One of the first suggestions was that the cloth protected the pigments and the gold leaf around the arrow. But another suggestion that quickly followed was that the cloth helped to preserve the modesty of the naked man. And finally, one student suggested that the reader might use the cloth to cover up the diagram so that they could test their knowledge, which is something I was hoping someone would put forward. It's a theory that I find quite interesting. So after encouraging the students to brainstorm several possible solutions like this, I then explained that there's in fact no right answer, and that we can't be entirely sure what the function of the cloth is, although it was quite possibly introduced into the manuscript to protect the image initially. Later users might well have used it in other ways, and in fact all of the answers suggested by the students could potentially be correct at different times. So the primary purpose of this exercise was to encourage the students to be open to ambiguity and uncertainty in page design, and to try and suggest to them that a medieval page can be just as difficult to interpret as the literary texts that they're more familiar with. I was trying to make them think like an academic might do when they're faced with something unfamiliar. In this class, I try to strike a balance between giving the students useful information whilst also encouraging them to do the talking. This was possible precisely because the students already had some knowledge about manuscript studies, but were in a position to learn more. They'd already been trained how to interrogate a literary text, and I was trying to show them how they could apply the same academic rigour to manuscript studies. And they took it on board extremely well. It was really useful for them. And it was also quite useful for me. I feel like I learned a lot from them, a fresh perspective on manuscripts that I've looked at quite a lot. In terms of challenges, I think the number one challenge I faced was timing, because they were so enthusiastic to learn more. I was sort of keen to push on and show them certain manuscripts to piece together a certain narrative that I was trying to construct, but their questions were sort of endless, wanting to know about every tiny detail that they could think of, which is of course commendable and great, but means that trying to cram a certain amount of teaching into an hour can be really challenging in this kind of context. But I feel very fortunate that I was able to have such wonderful resources at my disposal that encouraged so many questions at all. Just by way of conclusion, this was a really different experience from working with the Manuscripts Outreach Network that I was about to talk more about, but I found them both equally rewarding. And I'm really glad that I've been able to use the fantastic primary resources at Oxford to introduce manuscript studies to undergraduates. And I hope that some of them were as excited as I was when I first saw a medieval manuscript in flesh. And this is just a plug for the Teaching Codex blog, if anyone wants to